some work that Christian Reiswig and I have recently put on GRQC regarding a sort of unconventional type of gravitational radiation compared to the signals that we're usually looking at in these binary black hole in spirals. Apparently unconventional enough that I ended up in the Beyond Binary Black Hole session, even though everything that I'm talking about today is explicitly about binary black hole evolutions that we've done. So we're talking here about the nonlinear memory effect in gravitational waves. And this is a sort of a non-oscillatory signal which corresponds to an actual displacement of observers, which results from the fact that a gravitational wave has passed and the multipole moments of the system have changed slightly. So there are a number of ways that you can think of sourcing this type of effect. So for instance, in a hyperbolic encounter between two bodies, you'll have the bodies with an initial pair of velocities, which is different from the final velocities of the bodies. And this will result in a change in the local gravitational field, which is results in a displacement of observers, which actually in principle would be observable interferometric detector. That is an example of an effect called, which is a linear memory effect, which has been known sort of since the 70s or so. A more subtle effect is more recently being brought to people's attention, in particular by this paper by Christodoulou in 1991, which is a nonlinear memory effect. And this is actually sourced by the gravitational radiation itself. So if you think of, and Thorne has shown this in 92, if you think of replacing the bodies in this formula, which generate the memory effect by gravitons that are carrying the gravitational energy, then you can derive this effect as well. It's actually been come across a number of times independently. Probably the most earliest source that you can find is this one by Payne. Also Blanchet and Damour seem to have come across it in post-Newtonian calculations that resulted from Blanchet's habilitation thesis in Paris. So the main features of this memory effect is in principle that it's non-oscillatory. So it's a signal which grows with time gradually. It grows, I guess, steeply during the latent spiral and merger and then saturates as the black hole rings down. So it's a non-oscillatory signal and quite different from the standard 2-2 mode that we're often looking at. It's called a memory or hereditary effect because, in fact, it depends on the entire past history. So if you want to calculate the value at a certain time, you have to know the starting point and integrate over time the gravitational wave field in order to get the final value. And for the models that we're looking at, the effect manifests itself in the L0 modes, spherical harmonic modes. So in principle, so the dominant component in particular is the 2-0 mode, and that's going to be sort of the main focus of this talk. So the effect has recently gotten some attention, in particular with a series of papers by Mark Favata. He has done some work to try and estimate the size of the effect during the latent spiral, in particular the merger part, because this has been not been calculated before, simply because the post-Newtonian approximations break down a little bit early, and you need something like the EOB in order to bring yourself through the merger to the ring down. So what he has done is, first of all, he's extended the post-Newtonian estimate of the this memory effect, so at large distances to 3 p.m. But he's also been able to produce an EOB estimate of the effect using an EOB model which is tuned using the 2-2 mode of numerical relativity waveforms. So the 2-2 mode has been used to create the EOB, and that has been used in order to construct this estimate of the model, which goes through the merger phase and includes the ring down. So you can see here also the main features of this memory mode. So it essentially looks like a step function, which grows quite rapidly during the late in spiral and merger, and then flattens out. And so Previous estimates, for instance, couldn't include this late inspiral portion simply because they didn't have the COB estimates. So for instance, this red dashed line, I think, is the estimate by Kennefic, which included only the post-Newtonian portion and cut off as soon as the post-Newtonian broke down. So if you add this step function onto the 2-2 mode that you normally are looking at, you can actually see that it's not a small effect. It actually produces a visible displacement in the oscillations of the wave away from zero. So what we're going to be trying to do is measuring this wave in numerical relativity simulations, and this is particularly challenging, in particular because it's in general very low amplitude anyways, so the low amplitude waves beyond the dominant 2-2 mode are often difficult to resolve. But also the slope of the wave is very small, and we're normally looking at waves and measuring waves using psi 4, so this curvature component, and that actually corresponds to two derivatives of the strain. So if you have a strain which is very flat, two derivatives of that flat function is going to be very small indeed and probably unresolvable. And finally, it can be confused by gauge effects that arise from local wave extraction techniques. So Christian Ott has just mentioned a few of the techniques that are typically used. So Zirilli extraction at finite radius or using Psi-4 at finite radius. These finite radius and coordinate effects can be confused with secular effects that occur in your measurements. So it can be difficult to get a decent estimate of the wave. So just to mention some of the techniques that we're using to try and get by these particular problems. So I'm going to go quickly through this slide because most of the material has been presented at the last NRDA, in fact. So we're currently using a new evolution code, which is based on the use of multiple grid patches in the wave zone, and in particular a radial coordinate. So our grid structure looks approximately like this. So we have a Cartesian grid in the center where the black holes are evolving, and radially oriented grids which cover the wave zone. Now this provides us with a particular improvement in efficiency, which allows us to make much, much cleaner measurements. What we're able to do, if you consider this diagram where the radius goes out and time goes up and the source is oscillating at r equals zero or near r equals zero, we're able to, first of all, place our detection radius rather far out if we need to. So we're able to extract waves at say, for instance, 1,000 m compared to 200 or 100 m, which would be normally the case using a Cartesian code. But we're also able to push our outer boundaries out far enough so that our measurements actually are causally disconnected from the effect of the outer boundaries. So if you imagine the signal from the source traveling out to our detection radius here, then we have an outer boundary effect which is traveling inward. And what we're able to do is push this outer boundary and actually resolve the grid all the way out to the outer boundary far enough so that this entire domain is a pure evolution of the initial data in some sense. And so this measurement that we take at the extraction radius is unaffected by the outer boundary. So just some of the initial results of this code, just this plot, which is not particularly legible, but it doesn't matter. It's just showing a number of gravitational wave modes that we've extracted, so up to the L equals 8 mode, which we were able to measure the amplitude and frequency during the merger portion of the evolution. And in fact, these ring down frequencies we've been able to determine to up to, say, 4 decimal places. So we feel that we're getting very accurate evolutions of these frequencies and amplitudes all the way through the latent spiral and merger, and making a nice clean connection to the ring down portion. Here's just a plot of, for instance, the phaser that we got from this particular test simulation, showing that it's on the order of 0.01 over the 1,200 m that we've done this particular evolution, so 8 orbits or so. So just to make the point that we are able, with our finite difference codes, to get some sort of first-class accuracy. I mean, the current NRAR results show that things are not always as cheerful as that, but at least in certain test cases, and if you're willing to spend the computer time, you're able to get some fairly decent accuracy with these waves. So now I'm just going to mention just how we're doing our character, how we're doing our wave extraction. So this has been already described a little bit quite nicely in Maria Babiuch's poster. The method is Cauchy characteristic extraction, where basically what we're doing is transporting data from a world tube at a finite radius out to Descri Plus, where the gravitational radiation can be measured invariantly. So here's a schematic of, for instance, a Schwarzschild black hole showing our typical 3+1 slices in green evolving forward in time. What we're doing is we're saving data on a world tube at a finite radius. So here's our Cauchy evolution, here's our bodies in the center. We have data saved on a world tube. And as a post-processing step, we then take the data that we've stored here and we place it as interior data, so in inner boundary data, on a characteristic evolution. For this, we're using the PIT null code, which is a fairly successful code, which has a rather long history and contributions from actually a number of people in this room. So this code is being used then in full GR to transport the data from the world tube out to Descri Plus, where it can be measured invariantly in the Bondi frame. The particular function that we're measuring in order to determine the gravitational waves is the Bondi news, which is related to the strain by this simple integral. And so here we start to get into some results. So we're looking now here at the test case, which was published in the original. So it's the same equal mass non-spinning test case that we published in the original test paper for the Llama code. And we're looking here at the function, the news function, so the raw data basically that's determined at Scry, and its integral, so the strain, which corresponds to this memory effect. And so what we're seeing here is that we have a rather the expected slow growth during the merger phase. We get a rapid increase in the function and then it flattens out as the mode saturates. What's rather interesting is that on top of the memory effect itself, which is the non-oscillatory part, we also see sort of a ring down mode, which is quite prominently starting at around the time of merger. So we have a monotonic increase over the entire evolution, but then all of a sudden there's a very sharp point where the ring down sets in and we get a prominent oscillatory signal which eventually dies out. These dotted lines, which are shown in the inset, so this inset is showing the tail end of the news function. This corresponds to the quasi-linear mode that you would expect for a black hole of this particular spin. So we can see that the perturbation theory result is matching very well to, or our numerical result matches very well to the perturbation result at the ring down. Here we're using Mark's 3PN in spiral estimate for the memory effect, and we're plotting that on top of the memory. And we can see that we're able to fit this over quite a long period of time, and the two things line up very well. This is quite important because this is actually what's determining the integration constant that we need to apply here to get an offset. So if we want to actually determine what the final value of this memory offset is, we need to determine this integration constant, and the PN is what we're using at this end of the curve for that. So having handled the non-spinning equal mass case, we've now looked at a parameter study of spinning black holes. So again, all equal mass, and with spins aligned with the orbital angular momentum. So we're looking at two parameter sets. The first parameter sets have the two spins anti-aligned with each other so that there's a net total spin in the system. And the second have the two black holes spinning with the same direction, so either both spinning up or both spinning down. And looking at different, looking at the effect of different spin amplitudes on the wave signal. What we see in the anti-aligned case, so the case where they're orbiting like this, is something that we've seen in a number of different other wave modes. So for instance, you see this in the 2-2 mode, you see this in the kick calculations. All of these models seem to have a rather similar waveform evolution. So you can see that these modes are all lying exactly on top of each other you only see a small deviation from the high spin case, which is probably resulting just from lack of numerical accuracy, but actually still holding quite close to the to the mode that, that all of the models seem to follow. So in the case where the two spins are equal, we see similar features. But what's interesting here is that a rather prominent effect is that as the final black hole has a lower spin, so in the case where the two bodies are anti-aligned with the orbital angular momentum, we start to see a rather dominant, strong growth of the ring down frequency compared to the actual memory offset. And so this is actually one of the more prominent features in the ring down case, in the spin down case, I should say. So here we're just plotting the 2-2 mode with the memory superimposed on top of it. So this is just the memory mode, and this is the complete waveform, I think, including everything up to L equals 4. Although the waveform is visibly different from what you would expect, so oscillating around zero, in fact, it makes very little difference in terms of template construction. So I suppose that's, in some sense, good news that the templates can be done neglecting this mode with very little effect on the mismatch between this particular plot, this particular figure, and the one in which the 2-0 mode is not included. We can also look at the SNR that would be generated from these results, and you can construct models where, for instance, in the spin down case, because of the prominent ring down, you can just nudge the advanced LIGO noise curve. But what seems to be fairly clear is that this particular mode is not going to be a strong source for the advanced detectors, but probably quite interesting when it comes to Lisa and parameter estimation. And the other interesting fact is that these down-down modes, which in fact emit less gravitational radiation, actually are much stronger signals due to the prominent ring-down mode in these cases. And finally, just to make a point although the main focus of the discussion around here has been on the interferometers and the signal-to-noise ratio that we get for those, in fact, this type of step function signal can be a useful source for things like the pulsar timing array experiments. So these timing arrays, as been explained already this morning, are what they're looking at are millisecond pulsars, which are very stable oscillators, and looking at residuals in the time of arrival and trying to look for signals, in correlated signals over an array of events, over an array of pulsars, which would indicate that a gravitational wave has passed over the Earth, for instance. So there are a number of these experiments in existence. And in September last year, there was a rash of papers that were looking at this particular step function type memory effect and trying to estimate whether or not that would produce an observable signal there. And so the estimates that seem to come out of these particular papers is something like a delta H of 2 times 10 to the minus 15 would be required for a SNR of about 3 in these pulsar timing array type measurements. So here I've just plotted, for instance, for 3 different binary mass models, the horizon distance at which these things would be visible using a pulsar timing array. And so we can see that for these supermassive black holes of around 10 to the 9 m each, we would be able to see these out to horizon distances of a couple of gigaparsecs for spins that might be expected sort of in the high sort of 0.7, 0.8 range. I think there's just a summary slide left, so I'll leave it at that, since Eric is already standing up. So, yeah, thank you.
Are there time for a short question or two?
Okay, so I've got a... I think that what you're seeing, the ringing there, is probably actually just the quasi-normal ringing.
Yes.
It's getting mode mixed into the 2-0 mode because you're extracting with spherical and stratospheroidal harmonics?
No, that's actually, so we are able to, we've also looked at the spheroidal harmonics in this case, and it's not simply the spheroidal harmonics. So if you actually do the transformation to spheroidal harmonics, the mode mixing doesn't go away entirely.
Is there another question?
Very end of the room.
So I was wondering if you've been able to look at the 3-0 mode, because in post-Newtonian theory, there's this sort of anomalous memory-like term that shows up in the 3-0, which is not related to the Christodoulou memory. So I was wondering if you are able to extract that mode.
We haven't looked at that, so. We'll talk to you afterwards, but it should be interesting.
Okay.
I was just wondering if you tried to estimate detectability for Lisa and what kind of mass would bring the memory in band.
We have looked at the detectability, and actually the modes are quite prominent. So. Generally, in terms of the amplitude of what we're showing here, these amplitudes can at certain angles look similar to what the 4-4 mode looked like in Lisa as well. So if you think that the 4-4, for instance, is interesting, then this also becomes prominent there. So yeah, I don't know, maybe Christian has some idea about what the actual quantitative values were there. Yeah.
The signal to noise ratio is larger when you have an oscillatory feature, and since the memory is just a very low frequency component, it's not so prominent, but since you also have this ring down feature, you mainly actually measure this ring down feature. And since for the down down case, you get a much more pronounced ring down amplitude, you will see these. For example, this green curve there is actually the down down mode, and it's completely different to the behavior of the 2-2 mode, where because of the orbital hang up, you have a much larger SNR if you look at the up up case in that case. So it's mainly the ring down that you will actually measure which is strictly speaking not part of the memory effect, because the memory effect is this non-oscillatory feature. But
so in this particular mode, as you move down the sequence to large negative spins, you have an increase in the SNR, which is actually contrary to what you get for the 2-2 mode, where actually increasing the spins in a positive direction is what's increasing the SNR. So as you move down the sequence, you do get to levels where the two become sort of comparable amplitude.
Okay. Thank you. I think it's time to thank all the speakers of the session.
Do not yet leave.